stop wasting that energy on that. Like, just focus on 10 toes down and enjoy the moments.
On this episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast, we are joined by Adam Mazzari, the associate head coach at the University of California. Coach Mazzari's coaching journey began with Impact Basketball, which would then lead him into Moorpark College, where he served as an assistant before making the leap to the NBA as a player development coach for the Memphis Grizzlies. During his time in Memphis, he worked with and helped develop some of the league's top talent. Coach Maz then transitioned back to the college ranks, serving as an assistant coach at Vanderbilt University before joining Cal's staff. Known for his expertise in skill development, recruiting, and program building, Mazzari has built a reputation as a detail-oriented coach who connects deeply with his players. His diverse experience across the NBA, Division I, and junior college levels has shaped his unique perspective on the game. In this episode, we discuss what the key moments or relationships that helped open those doors for him to jump from the community college to NBA level, how pivotal fundraising is for a program in today's era of basketball, and the most underrated skill young coaches should develop early in their careers. Please welcome to the podcast, Coach Adam Mazzari. Dr. Dish Basketball is revolutionizing basketball training with the number one selling shooting machine in the world. Our innovative systems are the only training solutions that deliver more reps, motivation, and fun, empowering coaches and players to elevate their game faster than ever before. Featuring advanced analytics, immersive game-like features, and an easy-to-use interface, our state-of-the-art shooting machines are the preferred choice for progressive teams worldwide. All you coaches out there, thank you for tuning in another episode of yours truly, the Rising Coaches Podcast, here with Alan Major, Doug Caputo. Today, we are graced with the opportunity to talk with the associate head coach, the University of California, Coach Adam Mazzari. Coach Mazzari, welcome to the podcast.
What's up, guys? No, what's up, man? Thank you. Really good pronunciation on the last name, Doug. That was phenomenal. So happy to be here. Super excited for the podcast. Go Bears. I'm hyped.
Yeah. Appreciate you coming, man. This is great. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's great to get you on. Two, I've been practicing your last name in the mirror, staring at it, talking to myself for the last like 20, 30 minutes. So I'm glad to be able to get that out. But here we are, right? We get down, and especially with you, your background and what you have, you made it one, a quick impact and a quick jump. And that's something definitely to note, but also with it, you've seen some great experiences. You've been in the NBA, obviously high level, Vanderbilt, California. I know you've been with Impact Basketball. Ultimately is where a lot of things got started. But with all of that, when like everybody has those moments throughout their career where you're like, this is what I want to do, or that first I belong in coaching moment, there's so many different ways it could have clicked. What was the moment it clicked for you that you were just like, coaching, this is it?
Man, that's a good question. Good way to start us off. It's before all that, to be honest. Like, everyone sees that resume, but what a lot of people don't know is, like, my last year at the University of Redlands, I was like, I knew exactly what I wanted to do, which was coaching. And as soon as I graduated, I'm 23 years old, and I start a club team in Thousand Oaks. Coach Major, like in Thousand Oaks, because when we were kids, we would have to travel Long Beach to the Valley to get like really good coaching and really good competition. And I really wanted to bring that home to where I'm from. And I started this youth club team. I didn't want to do high school kids, didn't like high school kids. I wanted to do youth, 9U to 14U. And the quick story is it's all word of mouth. Like, I didn't know what I was doing. I'm fresh out of college. And I'm training two random kids, two 12-year-olds who just wanted to work out. And I love teaching. I love coaching. I love hoop. And I'm starting with two kids. And it's the fall of September of 2006. And nobody is showing up. Nobody's in the gym. I'm just working with two kids for 2 hours a day, like 2 hours every Tuesday and Thursday night. And you're wondering if you're really doing what you're supposed to do. And you fast forward 2 years, I'll never forget it. And I walk to this gym and I walk in, and now there's 60, 70 kids in the gym. And now we have actual teams, like a 12U team, 13U team, 14U team. We're entering tournaments. We're competing. we're getting better. And I remember the feeling of walking into that gym and seeing all these kids and all these parents trying to sign up. And it was special. And that's when I was like, man, maybe what I'm doing and the passion that I have for the game and the teaching and the basketball of it, maybe I'm right. Maybe I'm doing some good things. That's maybe that to answer that question of I arrived. Lucky for me, maybe it was at a younger age and I felt, man, I'm doing something right and let's keep it going. And it was awesome. It was special for 7 years of coaching 20 to 25 games a weekend, like just the grind of the U and club season. And it was awesome. And I'll never forget that.
You know what's great about that? First off, Dougie, the University of Redlands, where he played, if you want to talk about pace, these guys broke the speed limit in pace, man. Playing them. I still remember coaching against those guys, obviously a long time before you got there.
Yeah.
But you know what I love about you said, what you said is that that's as organic a start as you can have, right? Like typically guys that play stick around, they become a GA. The coach has a conversation with them about midway through the senior year, that truth-telling talk, like, hey man, probably this is it. We're probably not going to be going overseas. Probably no extra. Your career is coming to a close, but let me help you. Would you like to be a volunteer, GA, whatever? But that is about as ground up and as organic a way to find out if you want to do it. Because, and our game needs more of this. What I love about what you said, you took glory in things that weren't glorious at the time. Mm-hmm. Like trying to start a team and two kids and nobody the hell else around.
Right.
There's no glory in that. It's just that's as pure as it gets. And if you can do it then with the right spirit and the right heart, then you're on your way. And the game is going to take you where it takes you when you have that kind of spirit. So
I appreciate that. No, that's right.
A hell of a way to start, man.
No, I appreciate that. Thank you.
And especially those are the most humbling too. You're working with two kids in a gym. Like I did it myself. I was a GA at a D3 school. And you said it before, word of mouth, that is, especially for player development. Now, you can definitely attest to this more because you've been on that side. You a lot more progression with it. But with me, it's solely that is the best form of marketing is word of mouth. And the way for it to get out and about is by actually doing a good job and then making it consistent. But it doesn't take a couple weeks. That's the thing. It's like everybody sees all these guys training. Like, I know you've had some top of the line guys you've trained throughout it. And it's, I'm sure you were starting, as you mentioned, with two high school kids. So, like, you actually have to work your way up. No, you said not high school kids.
Excuse me. You didn't want to. Two 12-year-old kids who weren't the best players. But that was my goal, was just trying to improve and develop players and give them the coaching and teaching. Because, like, Ventura County, Islanders, man, it's a bubble.
And these kids
stay in the area, and they don't get better. Like, they're really good players. There's a ton of talent. Jaime Jaquez, there's a ton of talent in the Ventura County. And I just felt like we never got better playing club traveling team and playing against Camarillo and Newbury Park. Like, I wanted to open up parents' eyes. Like, that was the key. Open up parents' eyes to what real hoop is.
Yeah, no doubt.
The country and around the state. And, like, that was the goal of the program, was to just – it wasn't to win tournaments. It was to develop players. It was to improve our team and have fun doing it. And that's what was so exciting about it. And I loved that start that I had.
Yeah. Now, for context, Doug, where Thousand Oaks is, if something's 30 minutes away, that's a short drive.
Yeah.
So when he's talking like Long Beach and L.A. and some of the areas where kids would actually see some live speed, legitimate competition –
pressing,
it's 45 minutes with no traffic, if you're lucky.
Yeah.
And the problem is in LA, there's always traffic.
Correct. So
this Thousand Oaks bubble that he was talking about, like it's a great task that he did, because kids can get a limited view of how good they really are when you're just playing against the same guys in your bubble all the time. But yeah. Bottom line, Doug, LA is a big place.
So I've heard. But I guess one thing I want to talk on too off of that is like the skill development side, the AAU side, right? You start in those and then you ultimately start progressing, and it didn't happen overnight. But then years go on, you get a college position. When you go to a community college, you go to an MBA, you go to now Vanderbilt in California, which is where a lot of people want to be wearing that CAL on top of their head, that hat that you have. And so I guess my question is, like, talk about the moments or the relationships or really the process you had to do from going from that AU skill development to then getting that first college position?
Man, it's a perfect segue. It was because of my club team. Joe Bunasar, who runs Impact Academy in Las Vegas, he brought his son to my program. He brought his son, Jack. He was like maybe 9 or 10 years old. That word of mouth, he heard about this program all the way out in the valley, and he brought his son for a practice, and he was impressed. He must have liked what he saw, because that night he offered me a job. And he offered me a job to do pre-draft to help out with Terrence Ross and Kelly Olynyk. And then the following spring, do the pre-draft, Jamal Franklin, Phil Pressey, these names. And I'm like, I'm a fan of college. I'm a fan of the NBA. I constantly watch League Pass and stuff. I'm just like, oh my God, this opportunity is unbelievable. And for Joe to believe in me and and the talent, I guess I had of working guys out and getting guys better at the youth level, and for him to believe in that I could do it at a higher level was crazy. And that was the huge break. Like you said, the big moment in big break of how I went from a club coach and a JUCO coach at Moorpark College to the NBA is Joe Bunasar, like period, point blank. He had a huge deal with that. And when Memphis called him, he said everything he needed to say and got me in that door. And I took it from there.
Yeah, it's amazing how small the basketball world is. Joe's a friend of ours. Mm-hmm. He was recently on one of our roundtables that we do for our members and did a podcast with us as well. But we try to say that out here all the time. Like, you just never know who's watching, man.
Right.
Like, your one handshake from your life changing. And literally, that was you.
Yeah.
Like, one handshake, and then boom, everything changed.
Right.
And obviously, I know Coach McCarthy at Moorpark, one of the best human beings ever. So the other good thing you've done is you stay consistent with being around good people.
Yeah, no, that's super important. Like, I started my program with Kyle Kegley. I started the program with Kyle, really one of my best friends, really good player, really good coach. Alan, you know him extremely well. He helped me start it, like being around good people. Like, my mom ran the business side of the AAU program. Like, who more I can trust with money than my mom? Remy McCarthy, a legend in the JUCO world of California, and it was just learning from him. And then, of course, Joe. Like, I was very blessed. Like, I was lucky, guys. Like, I had really good parents in the program, from Kia Clark's parents. Malik Clark is a stud. The Schlackerts, the Hausers, Mary Hauser. That's how word of mouth gets. And I was able to coach these really talented kids because their parents allowed me to be me. And Joe saw that, and that was the big break. That's the transition that it was. It's like, that's what I did. And thank goodness that somebody recognized that.
Yeah, for sure. Never know.
Never know.
It reminds me a lot of, and I'm going to draw a blank on who it was, but the story that another person we had on the podcast made, you might remember this. It was Austin Rivers. They were working out, had no idea who he was. Doc Rivers was sitting there watching. Do you know who I'm talking about?
Kevin Eastman.
Eastman. Yes.
Kevin Eastman.
Wow. Yeah, it was the same story as you. He was working out Austin Rivers.
Yeah.
He really didn't know who this guy, like, and he didn't realize Doc was sitting over there watching. Doc ended up coming over some tapes or something. He goes, hey, like, I want to hire you for a job, and offered him right there. So it sounds like it was very relevant to you. That's crazy.
Sure.
Yeah, you never know who's watching.
For sure.
Fast forward a little bit now, going to where you were at, right, Cal, being the associate head coach. One thing that I feel like, and maybe we just never talked about this with anybody, is just what is the associate necessarily more and different to, or I guess more in terms of what are just some day-to-day duties? And I know that's a loaded question, but just trying to get an idea as to people who ultimately want to get into the type of position you're in. What does a typical day-to-day look like?
It's what you said. It's day-to-day. Doug is not the same every single day. As an associate, I treat it like I'm an assistant still. Like, I'm an assistant coach. And for Madsen, like, you know, the landscape of college is just so much different now. Like, it's just different. And the demands and the duties that he has to do that's not even basketball is crazy. Like, the meetings, the constant meetings, the fundraising. He might not be in the office. So if he's busy a day where it's off court and he's got to go to drive to San Francisco or take the BART to San Francisco, he's a big BART guy, or got to go to Richmond or go all these places, he's busy. And he's doing all these meetings and he's trying to fundraise and help the program, where my responsibility now becomes basketball, right? Practice planning. What are we watching for film? Who's doing the edit? Who's doing what drills? Just the structure of stuff. And I can take that responsibility now, and vice versa. Coach, we're getting ready for games. We got scouts. he's got to prepare. What do I need to do? Do I need to go to a lunch? Do I need to go fundraise? Like he let me go to London last summer to go fundraise. Like he can't, he's got five kids. He can't just do all these travelings and do all that. So like the duties have changed where it's not like I know exactly what's going to happen every single day. Now, the cool thing about Coach Madsen is we'll talk every morning. So we'll sit down and talk and see what the day looks like and ask questions and have that banter that we have. And then now I know exactly what his duties are for the day and what I need to do. That to me is I just want to help him and whatever blind spots he has, I want to take care of. And that's the duty of an associate head coach or any assistant coach, to be honest.
Yeah. You know what I love about that? Everything you just said, not one thing. And there's not that there's something wrong with this because there isn't. But not one thing out of your mouth was about, yeah, I'm thinking in 3 years, I'm going to be a head coach in 3 years.
Yeah.
Or I'm glad I'm associate head coach because that's going to help me get blah, blah, blah. None of that came out. And so the fact that you're taking this servant's approach to what you do, and that to me is the essence of, it's one thing to have a title. It's a whole nother thing to outperform your title. And so you're more concerned with the performance than the title. And we know how this business goes. There's a lot of guys out there more concerned with the title versus the performance. So you have the right spirit. But the beauty of it is you're taking the same approach you took with the 12-year-olds.
Yeah.
And you drag that right at Berkeley. So that's what helps you keep everything in perspective because you know what's in your rearview mirror. Yeah. And that's great. And you have and obviously with a terrific head coach that you guys obviously have great relationship and great trust. But I just love your servant's approach, man. That's the way to go in this day and age. As crazy as it all is, agents. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, guys want to be places yesterday. I get it. But you got the right approach, man. That's great.
So you mentioned fundraising too. I know that's definitely something, especially nowadays when there's so much money involved. And has that changed the fundraising trains drastically? I know it was always a big priority because that's a lot of money that can be used for the teams. But like, how much has that changed? And then how much is fundraising a benefit to programs? And not even just necessarily Cal, but just to the basketball program.
Oh, it's, you know, how the saying was like recruiting is bloodline, recruiting is the bloodline, recruiting is the bloodline. No doubt. But now in today's landscape, you need actual money to recruit. And you need to be ready for the portal. You need to anticipate portal stuff. So it's now become the bloodline of college athletics, of fundraising, having really good donors and excited about the program, excited about what you're doing, excited about the staff, excited about the players. It's changed so much. Like 2019, I come into college, my first time in like high level D1 college, and which is the grind that I love of driving a van and going to Allen Hancock College or whatever. But it's like I come to Vanderbilt and with Coach Stack, who was phenomenal for my career, it's basketball based, it's recruiting based, right? In 2019, transfers still had to sit out a year. It was crazy. And then now with Madsen allowing me to have more of a GM role of negotiating contracts, creating those, writing those out, it's all with fundraising. Having that responsibility, that versatility, well-roundedness that Coach Madsen wants me to have, it's been huge. And again, to answer the question, it's everything right now is we need a lot of support. And I feel like every program needs a ton of support. And it could be from a ton of guys. It could be from one really big time guy, but we need support. And that helps in the success of a program. It helps with everything to build it.
Yeah. You know, no school can ever have enough. Even with the schools that have the most, they want more.
Yeah.
So it's almost like you can't have enough.
Yeah, with the rep share is going to be a little different now, obviously. And schools are figuring out with collectives and stuff like that's even going to be possible. But leading up to this year, fundraising was huge. So we'll see what the rep share does. The landscape might change again. It's changing again.
Oh, it will.
We'll see what happens. But like up until these last 2 years, fundraising was the most important thing.
Yeah, it's definitely still evolving. Yeah. No doubt.
My immediate thought was, I was just trying to think of like a way to be able to say that to people. How do you get fundraising experience as somebody who doesn't have the background? Immediate thing that came to my mind is go run some fundraising event out in the community that you're at or the school that you're at. Run one for your basketball program. Like I was just trying to think of a way. And that was the first thing is run if you're at a basketball program, run some through the high school that you're at, run some through the college that you're at, a golf outing. That's the easiest way. something like that, a fish fry. There's more than enough of them. And you do that for a couple of years, and all right, in 5 years, I grew this from X to $10,000 more. And that right there is a marketable self, at least to be able to put on your resume to go around looking for a college opportunity.
For sure.
But no, it's definitely at Division III levels, there's kids getting paid.
No doubt.
It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy now. There's a lot more money involved with it.
Wow. And then my brother would have got paid. My brother would have been paid. That's good.
It's crazy. It really is crazy. But it's showing where things are going. Now, off of that, like you've mentioned the transfer portal too. So, of course, I know everybody who is in tune with basketball now like knows that is how this is going. But how much, if you had to take a, and this is a wild question, but like out of percentages, how much do you say, and again, I don't want to ask about Cal. I just want to ask in general, how much do you think the portal is utilized for college coaches? We'll say in your conference, portal versus freshman based.
It's different. Like Duke has, they can get the best freshmen in the country. Like there's different levels to it in the P4 level. It's tough for, now this is before ref share. I don't want to get in too many details of what's going on, but ACC, it's not an even playing field. Like some schools have a lot more in their collective than other schools. When that happens, you lose players, and you might, when you can't pay them because they're agents and they're getting these offers that, you know, exceed what you can pay. So it's tough. It's tough, you know, for schools that have limited resources to keep up with the big boys. So you have to be really good at evaluating the portal. You have to be really good. What are your priorities of roster construction? It's not just needs, but it's really tough when you bring in 9 new guys and how are they going to get along? You got to vet kids super quick. You got to vet their families. You got to vet coaches, and you got to just vet, and you got to really put a team together in a short span of summer practices. And then now, boom, we're in the season. Some teams have the last two seasons of having luxuries of mixing in freshmen and really good high school players, retaining key players, and bringing in the right transfers to fit. And other schools still have to, you might have 9-10 new guys on a team. You might only have 2 returners. So, like, those are the challenges right now of today's landscape. And we'll see, hopefully, with the rev share and all that stuff, if now retaining and continuity now becomes more of a thing, which would be huge.
It's funny you say that, Adam, because the other unique thing, like I've been on Cal's campus, familiar with the school. You guys have a unique place, honestly. Like it's a top 10 academic institution in America.
No doubt. Yes. Number one public school in the world. Number one public school in the world.
That's what I'm saying. A lot of people don't know that. And so that's another side of the vetting, even if whether it's portal guys or freshmen, is do they fit Berkeley?
Correct.
Because Berkeley's a unique spot. You know,
no doubt.
We could do a whole podcast on how different Berkeley is. But just that vetting thing, it's really magnified for a place like you guys, just because, again, it's a unique place. And I'm saying that in the highest compliment that I can. Cal's not for everybody. When you have a place like that, that becomes even more important, that if you do take a freshman, you know, that you want to be able to not only contribute, but also
keep them. Yes.
Successful. 100%. Yeah, exactly right. Yes. Exactly right. Yeah. It's a great place you guys have there, but it does provide its own challenges in a unique way.
Yeah.
It's definitely with the portal. And then I'd say with just freshman oriented, at least for us in previous years, we have been heavy portal. Out of 8 guys, we brought in 6 portal guys. So it was like, now again, that's a Division III, but that it's showing where the landscape's transitioning.
Right.
It's crazy, but you got to make it work the way you can. And that's the toughest part. Somebody mentioned to me the other day was always being, you guys touched on this, always be recruiting your own guys. That's the one thing that I learned is it's not necessarily you're going out to recruit other guys in the summer. You got to be recruiting your guys too, because they have probably multiple people DMing them, multiple people calling them. Even though they're not in the portal, they're probably still getting hit up. Player of the year, conference, first team all conference. Those guys are getting some phone calls. So you always got to be recruiting your own guys.
For sure.
So I guess off of this, like if there was anything for, we'll say, a young coach listening, right? You've given us some great ideas as to like different avenues to go down, different tactics to be able to help you move up. But in your eyes, what's an underrated skill that maybe there's a coach out there that they should be able to work on, or a very underrated skill in the coaching profession?
It's a great question. Really good question. I struggle with this a little bit sometimes too. Like, to me, the most underrated thing for any aspiring coach, young assistant, MBA, college, whatever, like, you have to balance your confidence, which you need to have to coach this game. Like, you have to balance confidence and humility 100%. And I can come off as cocky sometimes, and I don't want to do that, but I've put in the work, like your reps, your sweat equity that you have with players, you know, where you've been, the amount of film you watch, the amount of presentations you've done, the amount of scouts you've done, like that gives you confidence, right? You're going to have that confidence from the way you move, the way you walk into the gym, everything that, you know, the way you conduct yourself. You got to, it's got to scream confidence, because like we all played, bro, like when we were players, like we would sniff out frauds immediately. Like we would see fraudulent stuff all the time, like from coaches. And it's like, bro, come on, man. Let's play. Like, and in the NBA, that is super magnified. Like, you mess up on a scout. If Marc Gasol asks you a question and you don't know if they icing or whatever, blueing on a pick and roll, like, they're going to talk about that in the locker room. They're like, yo, Coach Maz don't know what he's talking about. So you need to have that confidence. And that confidence comes from doing the actual work. And then, but, like, the humility part is super, super important. And you're not always going to be right. Every coaches are different. There's different views. And you have to be open to that, and you have to humble yourself a little bit and look in the mirror like you don't have all the answers. You need help, and you got to want that growth, and you got to want it. You got to want to learn from so many coaches. And I've been so blessed to work with so many good coaches in my career, so many different ways to look at the game. And it's really, I've been very blessed. I've been very lucky to take my cocky self and humble it and be like, no, these other coaches are better than you. And they're right. That's the skill that I think as a younger coach, like you have that, you're on your way.
You just literally walked us into a question because, and I'm guessing you just answered it, but I'm going to ask the question anyway. You probably, once you step into a situation like the NBA, and I haven't done it myself, the closest I've been to being around a bunch of NBA players was Team Nigeria training camp a few years ago. And there was probably 15, 20 NBA guys in camp. And so being around those dudes for 2 weeks, but it really taught me, like, when you speak, be certain.
No doubt.
You know what I mean? And so that creates a humility. And I'm guessing the NBA stepping into that life taught you the importance of humility, because what's the phrase they have that goes around the league? Be seen and not heard.
Be seen and not heard, yeah.
And so it taught you how to maybe work at a different level, because number one, when you're first around in an NBA game or anything related to that, you realize how much faster things are going on.
No question. Like everything, the travel,
the speed, the athleticism, just the court, and just the
preparation,
court.
Everything, like like so, from off the court to on the court, for sure.
I'm guessing just that probably really humbled you in a way of, man, I'm thankful to be here, but I got some work to do.
Oh my goodness, no question. That right there, like I was coaching you in JUCO, so I was like, man, I have a lot to learn. But then you start realizing, man, this is the elite of the elite. This is the top 1%. Of players, but not only players, but coaches and staff. And these guys are so smart and they're so good. And it was perfect. I was blessed to go to Gerg's camp, Tim Gergovich in Vegas back when he did the camps, and I went for 4 years. And it's the best school of coaching that I've ever been to. And you just learn so much. And that, you said it, you hit it on the head, Alan. No, you got to learn. And you're going to humble yourself really quick because you think, but you don't know anything. And that's what happened to me. So that was huge for me in my career. Yeah.
And I want to make sure to throw out there too, everybody, you were saying you wanted to humble yourself. For those who don't know, Coach Maz over here also led the league in assists and led the country in all divisions in assist to turnover ratio at one point.
I wasn't that good. No, I had my brother who averaged 28 a game shooting threes. I had Gary Smith running the system, and I had more possessions, coach. Man. We were ahead of the game. I had more possessions to get more assists. So I wasn't very good. My brother was very good, and I was lucky to play with really good teammates that luckily in D3 made some shots. And
hey, but listen, there's a thing called being good enough to know that you're not. That's a real thing. Like that in itself,
self-awareness.
That in itself is a talent. That is a talent. Now, don't kid yourself. Yeah. So
that's awesome.
Nonetheless, no, but it's great. especially for young coaches to be able to hear this type of stuff, because everybody's going through, you never know. And that's the one thing you said, especially with confidence. I want to touch on that, because one thing that I've been starting to tell myself is, when you walk into a gym, you always see that one guy, like a weight room or just like a gym, basketball gym. Yeah. You always see that one guy, you're like, he seems arrogant. But if you actually, you don't know him, one, but then if you actually watch him, like, they've been doing this for so long. If you ever touched a couple weights, yeah, you start to get a little confidence, a little on your shoulders. You get them reps up, you get them shots up, you get that coaching voice, those reps that of, you do have to be confident, because exactly how you said, people can weed that out immediately. And as soon as they see that you don't know what you're like, if a kid comes up to you and says, hey, coach, what are we doing with this? And you're like,
right,
I think we're doing it. Let me check on that. And it's like, I ain't coming back to you again. I'm going to go to the guy who you just went to, because you have no idea what you're talking about.
No doubt. No, that's the perfect way to explain it. And you got to put in the work. It starts with your work. It starts with your preparation. So confidence comes from that. And your presentation, when you're presenting a scout, like, you can tell how much work you've put into each scout. And when you're working out a player, you can tell how much work and how much thought you put into developing a player. And you show an edit to a player, you can tell how much thought and process and what you're trying to teach. So it starts with the work, but yes, it's so important to have that presence of confidence in your voice. In your, I'm five foot nothing. Like, I didn't play in the league. But you look at me, I hope you like, man, that he feels mad, thinks he knows everything. So, like, it's a balance between that and also me not knowing everything and trying to get better and learn and grow. And that's really important. You can balance those two things, you can be very successful in coaching basketball.
No doubt. No doubt. Players,
that's a great way to put it.
Players don't get enough credit for being brilliant.
No doubt.
Their antennas are incredible antennas for knowing if you have it or if you don't, knowing if you're really rocking with them or if you're just trying to step and stone your way along.
No, so no point.
They know that as well. No, great stuff, man. Was the humility thing, was that the number, if you could say one thing that the NBA taught you, was it that, or was there one other lesson that you could, if you pull your entire experience from the league, like, what was there one other thing that the league being in that, at that level taught you?
Yeah, no, it's obviously humility, but another big one probably was, like, you're going to doubt yourself as a coach, or like, there's fear. There's real fear in the league, because my experience may be a little different, but I coached with three different head coaches, two different managements. Like, I wasn't hired by Dave Yeager, who I love to death. I wasn't hired by Dave. I was hired by management. Unique situation. I come in December. I don't know anybody. Stu Lash and Jason Levien, who was management, who hired me, they get fired right after the season. My NBA career is done in 5 months. I was like, oh my God. Fizdale replaces Yeggs. Oh my God, what's going to happen now? Fizz gets fired and JB Bickerstaff comes in. What's going to happen to me? There's a real fear. And, you know, what I learned was, through all that, like, there's a brotherhood in the NBA. And sometimes you're not going to be a head coach's guy, but what you need to lean on and trust is yourself and your belief in yourself and betting on yourself. That's cliche. Everybody says it, but there's dark times that creep into your mind of, oh my goodness, what's going to happen next? And if you don't have that belief and you don't trust the work, and like, I had to switch a mindset of, I'm going to produce. You know, you said that I'm going to produce, and I wanted to be in the gym. I wanted everybody to work out with me. I wanted to just produce and film and just do as much as I could with who I am and be myself, where I couldn't, I'm not, whatever happens, but I did everything I could without trying to not keep it about basketball. You know, I just try to keep it about basketball the whole time. So that's what I learned. It's like, you can't control everything. Control what you can. It's a cliche. Everyone says it, but it's so true. And that belief in myself was huge. And because in the NBA, man, my dad didn't play in the league. I got no connection to the league.
Right. No, that's,
ain't nobody going to save you. You got to put in that work. That's what I learned, is this believing in my work and believing in myself.
Yeah. And I hope that's what people listening to this pull from what you said, is you can't control the things that you wish you could.
Right.
But you can. We can all control the value that we add.
Yeah.
That's right. Really good. So you committed yourself to controlling the value that you had. We had a coach on last week, and he said something, and He said it in such a quick flow that I don't even know if he realized the magnitude of what he said when he said it. The idea is, what if you operated as if you had a one-day contract?
Yeah, it's really good.
How would you operate? And so that's really what that uncertainty reduced you to. It's like you're waking up each day, somebody just got let go, you don't know who's coming in.
Right.
Literally, those are one-day deals. So you just try to string together as many successful one-days as you can, stack as many as you can. And again, control the value that you add.
Yep.
And then you let that speak for itself. And that's
that's great. Great approach. That's exactly what it is. Like,
it's an outstanding approach. Yeah.
Yeah. Coach Maz, we always like to wrap it up with a final question. And really what that is now, you've already encompassed us with a ton of information. So to be honest with you, if you want to reiterate one of them, by all means. But if there's something else you can pull with it, and it really is, if we were to put you back into that first coaching position and your first opportunity, right? Knowing what you know now, what piece of advice would you share with your younger self to help you progress?
Man, like, I feel like everybody says this, and it's weird in this business. I think I'm guilty of this. I think a lot of people are guilty of this, guys. Like, but if I could tell my younger self, it's really enjoy this whole process. Like, you have to enjoy it. Like, we're guilty of always trying to get to that ladder, like trying to go up and move up. And from GAs to film guys to assistant coaches, associate, head coach, whatever, like, I would stop wasting that energy on that. Like, just focus on 10 toes down and enjoy the moments and enjoy. These are going to be memories 30 years down this line, and I'm done coaching. And this, the relationships with the players, relationships with the staff, enjoy the staff, enjoy the players, enjoy all those dinners, enjoy everything, like really soak it all in. And that's that. Everyone says this, it's super cliche again, but we get guilty of it. We get guilty of, man, like, where am I going to work next? Like, man, I want to move up. Man, I want the raise. Man, I need this. And just, if you could just take some time and really enjoy this process, because we are very lucky and fortunate with what we do. This ain't no job. This is not a job to me. This is my passion. I love to compete. This is the love of my life right here, is coaching basketball and teaching and competing and, like, just enjoying every moment, and not the losses, but enjoying every other moment would be great. That's what I would tell my younger self, is there's always lessons and just enjoy.
It's funny you say that, because everybody that comes on the pod says that in their own way.
Yeah.
And I feel bad when people feel bad for saying it, because they shouldn't feel bad. And it's only a cliche if it didn't really mean anything, but everybody says it because it's that freaking important.
It's so true. Yeah.
That's why it bothers me that sometimes people might say, everybody says that. Everybody, you hear the same thing over and over. Yeah, it's that important. That's why. Brush your teeth every day. It's that freaking important, right? You don't shave every day. You look like a bum. It's that important.
Yeah.
Right. So that I love that you said it, and please don't ever feel bad. If you came on this pod 10 more times, say that 10 more times.
If y'all have me, I'll be here.
I'm just, it's that important. So I love that you said it. Our profession can't hear it enough. Everybody's journey is like a snowflake. No two are alike. Yep. And I love the way that your path has been really unique. Like I said, I felt like I know you before this pod, because I coached your best friend and I didn't even know it. And it took me 30 years later to figure it out.
Yeah.
How cool is that? But listen, man, before Dougie lands a plane, just again, number one, glad you're feeling better. Appreciate you taking the time to do this. And like I said, man, all the best. I love your university.
Competed
against you guys several times. It's a special place. Yes, it's really one of the best kept secrets in America. It really is. Again, we appreciate you taking the time to jump on, brother.
Oh, thank you. Really appreciate you guys. Thank you. Thank you, Alan. Thank you.
No, you got it.
Yeah.
No, and like you said, we tell everybody, but honestly, we genuinely mean, you've given us the time to be able to talk. And not only, it has nothing to do with us. It's more because the people listening will hopefully take something out of this to be able to get the opportunity to go from Impact Basketball or that community college to make that NBA jump and that college jump. And hopefully someone has a similar or different path, but I'll get to the same point.
No, thank you.
So, yes, sir. Thank you for being on here and sharing your story. And everybody, that does it for another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. As always, Alan Major, Doug Caputo, and all you coaches out there, keep working, keep rising, coaches. We'll see you all next time.
Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines.
I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together.